the songwriting thing's very 50-50. I mean, yeah, he's the artist, but you have to remember he's singing my thoughts.
You know, I love getting the lyrics from Bernie. I love seeing what he comes up with. I love going into the room and creating something musical to his imagination. I've never gotten tired of that.
I just sift through them. There's one here that I've sort of done the other day called Tiny Dancer, which is about Bernie's girlfriend. You look at it, the words, blue jean baby, LA lady, seamstress of the band, pretty-eyed pirate smile, you marry a music man, ballerina. As soon as you get to the word ballerina, you know it's not going to be fast. It's got to be sort of gentle and slow, and sort of quite slow.
Day podcast radio show with Bruce Hilliard, today and every day, reaching out for innovative ideas in every way. Today's show is brought to you by Your Future. It comes with a lifetime guarantee.
Born Reginald Kenneth Dwight, March 25th, 1947, Sir Elton Hercules John is about as ubiquitous as any musician. He has worked with lyricist Bernie Taupin since 1967, a songwriting relationship that began with a newspaper ad. They have collaborated on more than 30 albums to date. For 31 years, Elton John has had at least one song in the Billboard Top 100.
It's a little bit funny, this feeling inside. I'm not one of those who can easily hide. I don't have much money, but boy, if I did, I'd buy a big house where we both could live. If I was a sculptor, but then again, no, or a man who makes potions in a traveling show. I know it's not much, but it's the best I can do. My gift is my song, and this one's for you.
Growing up the only child in post-war Pinner, London, England, young Reginald Dwight used music as a way to his solitary life.
I used to find solace in music when my parents, you know, used to argue. I used to go in my room and listen to Radio Luxembourg, and radio filled my head with dreams. I had a few friends. I had my cousins and stuff like that, but music was my best friend, and I lived and breathed for it. I grew up playing by ear at a very early age. I could pick up any tune and play it. And when I started playing the piano by ear, it was Winifred Atwell and people like that. My parents, thankfully, asked me to have lessons when I was 7, and I did, and I won a scholarship to the Royal Academy of Music.
Unlike many pop and rock musicians, he learned music theory and studied composition. Everything he would need to know to write his own music. Then he heard Jerry Lee Lewis.
Rock and roll arrived and changed the world, which it did. It changed my world.
Yeah, come on over, baby. We got chicken in the barn. Who's the barn? What's the barn? My barn.
Jerry Lee Lewis, Little Richard, Ray Charles, Fats Domino came into play. And so it was a whole new ballgame.
At the age of 17, young Reg was hooked on music and school became a big fat drag. He joined a band, Bluesology.
I formed a band at 15 called Bluesology with a couple of friends. Still didn't know what I wanted to do. I knew I wouldn't be a classical pianist. I didn't want to be a classical pianist. At that point, I just wanted to be in a band and play rock and roll.
Then he wrote and sang lead on their first single, Come Back Baby.
Thank you.
definitely hear the room for a more in-depth lyricist.
Reg was square compared with the other people that were in our band. Very short hair, little round glasses. He didn't look the part at all. We didn't see a great deal of him sort of socially. But directly he got down and played, everything else was just put aside. He was, he obviously had an immense talent.
He could do anything. He could sit down with a stack of music and work his way through it. He could play rock and roll, boogie-woogie, jazz, you name it. We couldn't have done what we did without him, really. Because of his musical knowledge, he was the person to knit it all together, I think.
I always got the impression that he wanted to progress his career, you know, much, probably more than other members of the band, and this was just a stepping stone.
So he made the decision to quit school.
My headmaster at Pinner County was Mr. Westgate Smith. I was petrified of him. And I knocked on his door and I told him the story of why I wanted to leave. And he said, well, I know how much music means to you. He said, I give you my blessing. He said, but make sure you work hard at everything you do.
And then he got fed up with the band.
And I was playing, I was getting more and more depressed. And I thought, this isn't the reason I started, wanted to play in a band. I hate this.
There was one time we were playing at this club in London and Reg got so hacked off with it. We're in the middle of this song and all of a sudden you can hear this racket going on at the back of the stage. And I turn around and it's him just completely lost his bottle. Tipped the organ up, he's fuming around, I've had enough, you know. And Baldry's still trying to sing, let the heartaches begin, you know. It was time to go then, yeah.
If I don't go, I'm going to be stuck here or work in a record shop, you know. There's no future. There's no future in this. There's no future whatsoever. So I answered that infamous advert of Liberty Records in the NME, wanting talent and songwriters.
Another response to the Talent Wanted ad came from a lonesome poet from Lincolnshire with aspirations of making it as a songwriter.
If you're traveling in the North Country Fair.
Bernie came down from Lincolnshire and there was this very young boy with long hair, very attractive, big reader, huge Dylan fan. He got me into Dylan far more than I was before. And we started writing together, and it felt comfortable straight away. It was like a hand in a glove. Love,
man. I just remember that we were both very shy. You know, being an only child, I think, gave him a certain sort of way of being. And for me, you know, being a country kid in the big city, I was sort of out of my depth. So I think we were both sort of swimming in deep water and basically trying to find something to hang on to, and we found each other.
And the rest, as they say, is history.
You know, Denmark Street, I mean, on any given day, you could see pretty much anybody going through there. So bands like the Kinks, the Stones, Donovan, they'd be doing their publishing deals and recording demos. So there was all this activity going on.
And then there was the showmanship.
I always say I was a bit like the Jimi Hendrix of the piano because I had freedom. I could do exactly what I wanted. I couldn't, you know, throw it up in the air, catch it, play it behind my back. But I could certainly fly on it and do handstands on it.
No, I was sort of a groupie, I guess. It was such a whirlwind that I just don't remember ever having time to sort of breathe, and it was just an extraordinary time.
This is Danny Sutton from Three Dog Night.
You go to a party on the Sunset Strip, and I go into the party, and it's Bob Dylan sitting on the piano. You know, all the English bands were coming into town, so it was there's just energy.
My second trip, Bernie and I went with Danny Hutton to meet Brian Wilson. So you can imagine, I mean, we met Dylan at the Fillmore East, and he went, "I really like that song, Ballad of a Well-Known Gun," and we was like, we couldn't hardly speak. I mean, you have to realize that I was meeting within a period of 2 months some of the greatest names in the world, and it was joyous.
The ink is black, the page is white. Together we learn to read and write. A child in black. Well, it's been building up inside of me for, oh, I don't know how long. I don't know why, but I keep thinking something's bound to go wrong.
The songwriting thing's very 50-50. I mean, yeah, he's the artist, but you have to remember, he's singing my thoughts.
You know, I love getting the lyrics from Bernie. I love seeing what he comes up with. I love going into the room and creating something musical to his imagination. I've never gotten tired of that.
And I just sift through them. There's one here that I've sort of done the other day called Tiny Dancer, which is about Bernie's girlfriend. You look at it, the words, blue jean baby, LA lady, seamstress of the band, pretty-eyed pirate smile, you marry a music man, ballerina. As soon as you get to the word ballerina, you know it's not going to be fast. It's got to be sort of gentle and slow, and sort of quite slow.
After Tumbleweed and Madman, we went in a whole different direction, you know, and suddenly overnight we went from being these American FM darlings of kind of folk rock into the, suddenly morphed into this other character. Elton basically became a pop star.
And I think it's gonna be a long, long time. Touchdown brings me round again to find I'm not the man they think I am at home. Oh no, 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 I'm a rocket man, burning out his fuse out there alone.
Rocket Man was the first big single, I mean a pop single, because up to then I'd had your song and Leaving on Tiny Dancer weren't big hits at all. So yeah, that changed everything.
He loved it. He loved it. He had money to spend. You see his wardrobe started to become more, you know, embellished, you know. So, oh no, he took it all in his stride. This is what he'd wanted. He'd always wanted to be a star.
I think that's what would really took him to the superstar area.
I remember when Rock was young. Me and Susie had so much fun. Holding hands and screaming stones. Had an old gold Chevy and a place of my own.
I thought he suddenly jumped out of his skin and became a giant sort of show business character. He was larger than life. And some of the clothes he wore were unbelievably funny. This is probably the most outlandish one.
I felt that I could have carte blanche to do what I want, and I did. I took Legs Larry Smith on tours. Larry would come and tap dance wearing a crash helmet with a wedding couple on, and then we'd use midgets. We had a band of midgets dancing with us, and we did all sorts of potty things. People would come and think, well, what's he gonna do now?
Elton was having fun. The fancy dress and rock and roll pastiche of Crocodile Rock were a far cry from the somber songwriter he appeared to be back in 69. And it wasn't to everyone's taste.
I shook my head and rolled my eyes and thought, OK, I don't know if I thought maybe he'll grow out of this, you know, he'll move on. Yeah, it was ridiculous. I mean, you don't sing your song in a Donald Duck outfit in Central Park. It's beyond awful. But nobody was really going to tell him no at the time.
People say you shouldn't wear clothes. If you sing something like your song, you shouldn't wear something like that. It's like, oh, fuck off, why not? And I think then you become a law unto yourself and you say, oh, there's nothing I can't do or can't get away with.
It took off. The music industry in general took off. Elton was on top. There was a carnival atmosphere, but his personal life, and particularly his relationship with his partner and manager, John Reed, was in turmoil.
It's very hard to maintain a lifestyle where you travel so much, where you're away from people so much. You take hostages, you take them on the road with you, and then they hate you, and they, you know, it all ends in tears. And any relationship that you bring drugs and drink into, or drugs especially, is doomed to failure.
There was media coming around and wanting to do interviews with him, and cameras and fans lined up, and it was a trailer, and then he went there by himself and sat in that trailer, and rather than talk to people and shake hands with people and all that kind of stuff. I thought he was handling it all really well, but beneath that, he didn't realize kind of the darker side of what was happening.
You run away with this thing and you enjoy, you know, life, you know, I don't stop touring, I don't make a record. But then at the end of the day, what have you got in your life? You go home to an empty house, you go home and then you're in an empty house, so you get a lot of people down, you do drugs and you know, is that fun? Not after a while, it isn't, no.
The night before the show, as his family and friends were gathered at his LA home, Elton attempted suicide, taking an overdose of pills.
We didn't know. We were up all night. I mean, everybody. It was a very emotional time. And his mom and his grandma was over there at the time. He bought them over to see this gig, you know. And that was a touch and go time, you know.
I took a lot of coke and I still worked. I didn't stay at home taking a lot of coke. I still went out there and played and made records. I wasn't on drugs all the time, but there were certainly records that I made where I was on drugs. And I wrote on drugs. And you tend to think what you've written is much better than it actually is. Look at me, I'm coming back again. I got a taste of
blood. You could see the road that he was on, and I could see it. His mood swings were pretty drastic. He got really... He went very Judy Garland on us.
Goodbye, Norma Jean. Though I never knew at all, I had the grace to hold yourself.
I was very confused, pretty down on drugs. And, you know, you can't think straight when you're doing that amount of drugs. So there's got to be a balance. When I, you know, became an addict and an alcoholic and I went to rehab, blah, blah, blah. One of the things that was pointed out is that my whole life was Elton John. There was no other person in it.
And with help from his friends, he got things straightened out. Then one of his friends left. His tribute single, Candle in the Wind, 1997, in honor of the passing of Princess Diana, sold over 33 million copies worldwide and is the best-selling single in the history of UK and US singles charts.
Goodbye, England's rose. May you ever grow in our hearts. You are the grace that placed yourselves where lives were torn apart. You called out to our country and you whispered to those in pain. Now you belong to heaven and the stars spell out your name. And it seems to me you lived your life like a candle in the wind, never fading with the sunset when the rain set in. And your footsteps will always fall here along England's greenest hills. Your candles burned out long before your legend ever will. Loveliness we've lost, those empty days without your smile. This torch we'll always carry for our nation's golden child. Even though we try, the truth brings us to tears. All our words cannot express the joy you've brought us through the years. And it seems to me you've lived your life like a candle in the wind, never fading with the sunset when the rain set in. Your footsteps will always fall here along England's greenest hills. Your candles burned out long before your legend ever will. Goodbye, England's rose. May you ever grow in our hearts. You were the grace that placed yourselves where lives were torn apart. Goodbye, England's rose. From a country lost without your soul, who missed the wings of your compassion more than you will ever know. And it seems to me you've lived your life like a candle in the wind, never fading with the sunset when the rain set in. And your
Your footsteps will always fall here along England's greenest hills. Your candles burned out long before your legend ever will.
It was written out of pure innocence. I mean, when you listen to the lyric of that song, you can tell that it's written by somebody who's very naive and very young, and I was. I mean, you know, I was 17 years old, never been kissed. Well, I don't know about that, but pretty much.
Elton John recently announced his retirement from touring in January. Before he does, he will be on the road beginning September 8th, 2018, in Allentown, Pennsylvania. It'll be the Farewell Yellow Brick Road Tour, lasting 3 years and 300 dates. Until then, you can tell everyone this is your song.
It's a little bit funny, this feeling inside. I'm not one of those who can easily hide. Don't have much money, but boy, if I did, I'd buy a big house where we both could live. If I was a sculptor, but then again, no, or a man who makes potions in a traveling show. I know it's not much, but it's the best I can do. My gift is my song, and this one's for you. And you can tell everybody this is your song. It may be quite simple, but now that it's done, I hope you don't mind, I hope you don't mind that I put down in the words how wonderful life is while you're in the world. Sat on the roof and kicked off the moss. Well, a few of the verses, well, they've got me quite cross. But the sun's been quite kind while I wrote this song. It's for people like you that keep it turned on. So excuse me for getting, but these things I do. You see, I've forgotten if they're green or they're blue. Anyway, the thing is, what I really mean, yours are the sweetest eyes I've ever seen. You can tell everybody this is the song. It may be quite simple, but now that it's done, I hope you don't mind, I hope you don't mind that I put down in the words how wonderful life is while you're in. I hope you don't mind, I hope you don't mind that I put down in the words how wonderful life is while you're in the world.
Support for Better Each Day comes from BruceHilliardHomes.com. For a better day in buying or selling a home, search BruceHilliardHomes.com or visit our website, Better Each Day, for more information. And while you're there, subscribe to the show. It's free. That's BruceHilliardHomes.com, Windermere Real Estate. And make it better each day.
Radio show with Bruce Hilliard. We'll be back with a new horizon, but until then, honor the future. It comes with a lifetime guarantee.
And we're all just trying to make the next day a bit better.